I still remember where I was the first time it hit me. I maybe do have ADHD. And it's funny, I posted a TikTok the other day about having ADHD, and a good friend of mine texted me and said, "Remember when you swore to me you didn't have ADHD?" Oh, goodness. Well, listen, if you relate to that at any point in your life, I want to share a podcast that you should tune into. It's called ADHD Aha, hosted by Laura Key. It's candid stories from people who share the moment it clicked that they or someone they know has ADHD. In each episode, you'll hear heartfelt interviews about the unexpected, emotional, and even funny ways that ADHD symptoms can surface for adults. And it doesn't always look the way we thought it would. So check it out. To listen to ADHD Aha, search for ADHD Aha in your podcast app. That's ADHD Aha, with Aha spelled A-H-A. Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. Welcome to Struggle Care. I'm your host, Casey Davis, and welcome to this week's bonus episode. Earlier this week, I ran an episode called A Grief Observed, where I interviewed three different people and asked them the same questions about their experience in grief. This bonus episode is interesting because I actually had a fourth person that I interviewed, only this person, their loved one had not passed yet when we did the interview. They talk about something called anticipatory grief, and I asked them the exact same questions. So enjoy the interview. So I have with me now Meg Boberg, who I spoke to recently because her and her mother actually wrote an article together about anticipatory and preparatory, those are hard words for me to remember, grief. Hi, Meg. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what is anticipatory grief?
Other than a hard word to say.
Yeah, right.
Anticipatory grief. Well, first of all, I came across the subject when I was writing for, at my previous job, I was writing for what was a company that does in-home care for elderly, the elderly, home nursing care and such. And I had to pick blog topics for them. So one was that I came up with was, how do I, as the adult child, cope with my parents' incoming or upcoming death, rather, is how can I cope with that? And it came from my own experience because my own mother has a terminal cancer diagnosis. She was diagnosed in the spring of 2019. And so I didn't even know what it was called. I just knew that it was something I was experiencing. So I Googled it, like, grief when someone hasn't died yet, because it is something that is, it's not conventional grief where, you know, you can go through the five steps and process it and then move on to the acceptance. I don't think anyone moves on from grief, but you can do a whole other podcast on that, Casey. But anticipatory grief is grief that occurs before the loss or during the loss. And you may be grieving several things at once, like at the same time, watching your loved one as change as they're going, moving away from what you knew and how you knew life as it was when they were their full vibrant self before their terminal diagnosis.
Yeah. And, you know, there's not any rituals. Like, our culture isn't great with death, but at least we have some rituals for after a person has died. But there really aren't any grief rituals for knowing that a person is terminal and that they're going to die and processing through that grief.
Correct. It does make it quite challenging. I've joined some support groups for children whose parents are upcoming deaths or terminal diagnoses, I should say. And you can lean on them a bit more because something we were said we were going to talk about, me and Casey, is how do you answer the question, what can I do when people are here, you're having a hard time? Because obviously, I would think most adult children or children, anyone whose parent is dying is having a hard time. So they want to know what they can do, but they can't relate typically because death is such an uncomfortable topic. Nobody wants to think of their parent or anyone close to them dying, but you know, you only have one mother, you only have one dad. So I typically lean on those who I don't even know them. It's just people online support groups, and they're the ones who I can lean on because they can relate to what it's like to lose someone, or they are losing someone, and they don't have the, I'll say, quote unquote, luxury of like the rituals, like you said, because that's something where you can get closure. Well, there is no closure when you're watching somebody wither away. It's terrible.
So speaking of that question, we're asking everybody, you know, how do you feel about that question what do you need? Or what can I do? I'm sure that you heard that a lot when your mom got her diagnosis.
I have. And if you read the blog that will be linked with this podcast about anticipatory grief, my mom has had up and down health for the last about 10 years, but she's been diagnosed with her terminal diagnosis for about 4 years. And it's been a long road. So people do ask that occasionally. And sometimes the cynical part of me, which is a large part of me, is I want to be like, oh, you're just asking that to fill the air, you know, but I know a lot of people are sincere. And I will tell them, and it took me a while to wrap my brain around, what do I say? Because I'm like, I feel like people do have this notion that they want me to keep trucking because she's not gone. She's still there. Like, just act normal and adult. Be an adult. Do what you're supposed to. Go to work. Get your paycheck. Pay your bills. You know, get everything done. But I feel like when they're asking, what can they do? I finally found my answer to that that helps me. I'm not saying this is universal to everyone going through anticipatory grief, but I say, please let me vent, because I feel like it helps me get my thoughts out, because it's all that's on my mind. And left to my own devices, I probably would do what many other grievers do, which is sit and stew and stare at a wall and dissociate, which I think is unhealthy, and just let the water cups on my nightstand pile up, which is a direct correlation, by the way, between my clinical depression level and just, yeah, what's going on at the moment. It's just, I will sit and stew and bite my nails and just like get frenzied because there's nothing I can do but sit with my thoughts. So I let people ask me questions like, how's it going? What's going on? And how did you feel about that? Like, they're not my therapist, obviously, but it's good to have somebody who wants to like talk through it with me, especially if they know my mom, because while therapy is great, she doesn't know my mom. So I talked to my mom's sisters. My mom is one of seven sisters, so of five of which are living still. And I talked to my mom's friends. I talked to Nancy Stordahl, who writes the blog Nancy's Point, which the blog is we've been mentioning. And she's a great advocate for breast cancer, women with breast cancer and breast cancer survivors. And I just feel like it helps when people let you speak what's on your mind, because I know not everyone is comfortable talking about heavy topics like this. And I respect that. I'm sure people see the name of this very podcast. They're like, oh, not going to hear that one. That one's too heavy. But it definitely helps me. I listen to tons of podcasts just like this one because they help me hear other people's experiences. I'm like, oh God, thank God somebody else, you know, felt bad that they didn't get to go through any rituals either. You know, that it sounds silly, but it's like, I wish I could have some sort of closure, but there is no closure when they're still living. And it sounds bad too. It's like, ew, I want to have something for me when she's the one who's suffering. It just sounds bad to me. And I feel guilty and then feel ashamed of myself. So it's just compound emotions.
When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we're alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor turned patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes a life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future no longer is a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean when you have a child to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and was named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath. Shout out to Claritin for giving me some free samples and for sponsoring this podcast. I am a seasonal allergy sufferer, which means that sometimes I'm lying in bed reading a book that is super happy and my husband says, what's wrong? Why are you crying? Because I am sniffling and he thinks I'm crying. But no, it's just seasonal allergies. Luckily, that does not happen anymore because I use Claritin D. We can live Claritin clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sniffing, sneezing, watery eyes, itchy nose and throat. It's great. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. As for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter, you don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed.
Hey, if you enjoyed my episode on IEPs and you want to listen to more podcast episodes about IEPs, I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. You might have heard me talk about IEPs on my episode, and this latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I checked out these episodes, and I think that they are a great place for you to go after listening to mine. They go into a little more detail and answer a little more in depth about what an IEP is and whether your child needs one. So listen to Understood Explains by searching for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. I hear the helpfulness in being able to, because even now it's like talking about what you're experiencing and even those like conflicting emotions helps you process through what those emotions are and what they feel like. And that's kind of the only thing you have right now, right? In the absence of those other rituals, in the absence of quote unquote, you know, moving on, moving forward. So let me ask you this. When your mom got her diagnosis and as this, you know, progresses for her, is there anything that people have done or said that was particularly helpful to you?
Well, people who have helped, even it surprised me because I posted something on LinkedIn, for example, on my LinkedIn saying, I'm having a hard time, you know, going through family crisis and hashtag bereavement or hashtag grief and loss. And then like three people who I barely knew from a previous job reached out to me and they're like, they came with like five paragraph messages to me on LinkedIn about how they could relate to what I was going through, because one of them said, oh, my father recently died and I was the executor of his will and we didn't even have a great relationship to begin with and I just got a new job and I had a new baby and all this. And I was like, wow, it just gave me a whole new perspective on things about how complex grief is and the emotions behind it. And it gives you like fresh perspective on, it's like you get kind of in your own world and how nobody's problems are as bad as mine are, but it's not true. Other people have different flavors of problems. I mean, it does definitely, like, you get morose and like such saturated in how terrible your grief is, but then you see other people going through different types of grief. You know, that really actually comforted me to read, because read his thoughts of when I sent him blogs I've written or other things I've written about grief. And this was just an acquaintance. We'd sent like maybe a couple emails back and forth. And then he saw my post on LinkedIn and he pinged me, and a couple other people pinged me and they were like, follow this death doula on LinkedIn. And I was like, what the ever loving F is a death doula? But then I found out then they are like pregnancy doulas or however you describe that. I don't have kids, but they help you navigate the process of someone's death. So it sounds like an incredible service to me, but those were things that actually helped me that were constructive. And another thing was my aunt the other day, one of my mom's younger sisters, she's the eldest of the seven, by the way, asked me, what can I do? And I was like thinking again, like, you do. I knew she's the kind that likes to be useful and she's a stayed away. So I said, well, you know, something you could do is, my dad is her caretaker and my sister-in-law and I, well, I need to contribute more, but like to cook for them. So my dad doesn't have to do all the cooking. And I said, you could like give them a meal, you know, order something takeout for them and have it delivered. So that was something that I felt good about having somebody, and she, I'm sure, felt good about contributing in some way. So just giving back to somebody when they're stressed out. It's not just when somebody's gone, like you need to, you don't need to, but it's helpful to pitch in and like, because caretakers, that could be a whole other podcast for you, is the grief that caretakers go through, because it is immense, I'm sure. And the burden, or not, I don't want to say burden, because that's so, such a mean word, but the, what caretakers go through, it's incredible to watch them. I watched my own grandma, my dad's mom, care for my grandfather for a couple years before he died. And it was just incredible to watch because he couldn't take care of himself at all. Like, he had something called multiple system atrophy, which is kind of like Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS. And he couldn't feed himself or go to the bathroom by himself or groom himself. And she did all that. So now it's like my mom's lucid and all that. But my dad is taking care of my mom in a lot of ways. So it's just interesting how that happens. But yeah.
I think it's really cool to hear that people had kind of pinged you on LinkedIn because, like you mentioned, death is a really uncomfortable topic for people. And I can imagine that there are people that are like, oh, I don't know her that well. I don't know if I should talk. And not that everybody would, you know, would experience that the same way you did. But it's interesting to hear, you know, you saying like really talking about it, like having people talk openly about it, having people talk to you about it, even though you're, what is it now, 4 years in, like it's still a very present experience and topic in your life.
Oh yeah. And things change all the time. Her status, like even on a monthly basis, things continue to evolve. Just, I won't get into the nitty gritty, obviously, but it's just always kind of heartbreaking to watch how things progress. And
do you feel like you're witnessing just like thousands of little deaths over the past few years?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there anything that somebody has done or said that was maybe well-meaning, but just particularly not helpful to you?
Yeah, just like those people I had mentioned before, my cynical thought of filling the air of, I call them the hashtag thoughts and prayers type. Just literally.
I'm sorry for laughing, but it's a perfect description.
It's just the slacktivism, throwaway thoughts and prayers. And I did tell that aforementioned guy who I talked to on LinkedIn that I thought that about them. And he said, well, you know, some people just get uncomfortable with death and they are well-meaning. I was like, I get it. But at the same time, I'd rather they just like, you know, figured out something a little more constructive to say, because that's just, file that under column, you know, useless, because it does nothing to make me feel better. It just makes me annoyed because I'm like, okay, the thoughts are nice, but, and the prayers, like when you're a non-theist, it just grinds my gears. So that bothers me. But if it were to come to, and see, I haven't reached this spot yet, but if people were like, she's in a better place, I'd be like, ooh, you know, I'm laughing because I was just watching an episode of Golden Girls, and Dorothy and her mother, Sophia, are like, you know, what, 60 and 80 years old? And I was like, everyone should be so lucky to have their mother around when they're 60. My own dad is 70 and his mom is 97. Still kicking, still lucid, still with us. And I'm like, I won't be 70 with my parents, but I can't keep talking about that or I'll cry. So ask me something else.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who have still not been reunited. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called El Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. You can find the link to donate to El Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, alotrolado.org aotrolado.com/volunteer. That's AlotroLado.
A few weeks ago, my husband's beloved grandfather died, and it's been a really sad time for our whole family. But one of the moments of light in this whole process was shortly after he passed away, I got an email from my mother-in-law, and she had sent all of us a link to his StoryWorth book. I don't know if you're familiar with StoryWorth, but I have a new appreciation for them now that we have a StoryWorth book on my husband's grandfather. Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. StoryWorth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story, long or short, it doesn't matter. And then you get emailed a copy of their response as they're submitted in the course of a year. You'll get to enjoy the retelling of their stories that you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before. And after that year of fun, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. I am so grateful to my mother-in-law for doing this with her dad. We love it. Families love StoryWorth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. So Mother's Day is coming up, and I want to give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you will cherish for years. Right now, save 10% on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/struggle. That's StoryWorth.com/struggle to save $10 on your first purchase. Whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day, or just because you know that sometimes time is short and you want to capture those memories. Well, it's interesting. You know, I think when we think about grief, we typically think almost exclusively about when someone has already died. And as a culture, we're already really uncomfortable with death. So I can't imagine how uncomfortable people are with the idea of this anticipatory grief. And so I'm curious, how have some of your like closer friends reacted? Like, did you have anybody pull away? Did you have anybody really show up for you? Like, how have the people around you kind of been interacting over the past few years?
People have been pretty good about it. I mean, I try not to dump on them all the time just because I know that's too heavy. And also, I don't want to talk about it all the time. I mean, there's not like constant updates. I feel like I spread it out between different people. Even my own boyfriend is like incredible sounding board and I can lean on him. And sometimes I do call him at like midnight when he's in a dead sleep. And I'm like, ah, I'm freaking out. I need somebody to talk to. But I try to, you know, use it when I'm really in distress rather than all the time, because I know people have boundaries too, just like I do. And yeah, it's people are pretty good. People check in on me, and I try to utilize the people who check in rather than go to people randomly and be like, can I talk to you about death? Like, I feel like that's like the religious person who walks up to your door and asks you to join their religion. It's just so unwelcome. And or like maybe they have some agenda, and yeah, it's just, yeah. I try to know who to talk to and who is probably uncomfortable. Some people also, they may have actually lost a parent, but they don't want to talk about it with me because it's just too raw still. You know, that's what I'm trying to, that's why I'm glad you said you're going to talk to other people to get a more well-rounded perspective, because I'm sure some people are listening to this right now and thinking, Meg, me, that's me, or is way off. She's just like cynical and talking about like how people, thoughts and prayers, people are assholes. Like, you know, it's just, everybody's got their own opinion. And I am just one view of many.
Well, I think that's important though. Like, one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode in this way is because I think as a culture, you know, feeling uncomfortable with death, and we see somebody that's had a loss or is going to have a loss, and we want so badly to know what the right thing to do is. We want like the script, like what is helpful, what isn't helpful. And the truth is like something that one person finds helpful, another person might be annoyed, just like out of control about. Like one person may love, you know, I have family members that say like, please do not bring me food. Like, please do not. I hate that. And then other people would say like, God, sending a meal is the best like burden you could take off my back. And I think it's really powerful to hear people as individual, unique people going through this experience of grief and loss. Because at the end of the day, you know, us wanting the right thing to say is really about us and our discomfort. And I think what we're called to do when the people around us are mourning is just engage in this human, messy human experience, knowing like, I might not do it right. I might not do exactly what you said. And I might say thoughts and prayers and you get annoyed with me, and that's okay.
Yeah. I don't blow up at those people. I just kind of roll my eyes internally and I'm like, mm-hmm. You know,
and you get to have that experience, and it's not about me. You know what I mean? I don't have to worry that much about, you know, oh, it wasn't exactly what she wanted to hear. Like, you just, I think
saying something at all is better than saying nothing, because some people say nothing. Like, my mom, I know herself, has had some people who were good friends who have just sort of withered away, like gone off the, like out of her life, because I think it's too hard to deal with watching a former BFF go through something so like drastic as cancer. I mean, it's hard, but that's pretty crappy to be like, oh, I'm just gonna step back or step away completely because what you're going through is too much for me.
And I think that's been the only like consistent answer between everyone that I've talked to, is the only thing that is definitely not helpful is just disappearing. If it's someone you have a relationship with, right? Like, just being so uncomfortable or so worried that you're going to get it wrong that you just don't engage at all.
Yeah. And I've heard this about, like, I can bring up other topics that are unrelated to grief. Like, for somebody, like a friend who is transitioning, you know, from one gender to another, and like people are like, oh, get talk to them because that's awkward and new name and what the hell. Like, if I were to get married and change my name, nobody would be like, oh, that's too awkward, can't call you by your new name anymore. It's like, just get hip with it, deal with it, and just make the effort. I'm sure they're not gonna freak out at you if you accidentally drop the wrong name. Just apologize and move on, and you know, make the effort. The effort is always appreciated, even for me.
Make the messy human effort.
Yeah, make the messy human effort. That's the perfect way to put it.
Well, Meg, thank you so much. This has been a really insightful and helpful contribution to this conversation. And I wish you and your mother peace in over the next few months and years, you know, in whatever way that you can grab at it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we'll link that article that we mentioned down in the show notes if you guys want to check that out. I also noticed in the article that there were some worksheets that you and your mother had filled out to help process through some of those things. And so there's some cool resources on that blog. You guys go check it out. Thanks, Meg.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear?
Gone.
Poof.
Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working, and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.